meeting to be December 1st at 11:38 a.m. Members present are representatives Jeff and Sam, and Jeff and myself for respondents. Thanks so much for recruiting Secretary Cuffey and other other nominee members for joining us this morning. If you heard already, it's great to understand on your cell phone. We have two agenda items today. This is Representative Liz Snyder. I represent District 27. I know these are the best parts of East Anchorage, Palmerston, and Volunteer Funnel, so I'm listening. I can say my name very well. So, yes, I'm introducing to you here HB 260. It should look very familiar to you because you first heard it during a special session of HB 4008. And as alluded to in the introduction by our chair, this addresses the PFD formula. It's pretty much the sole purpose of this bill. With me, I have my chief of staff, Elena Stolen-Gate, and I will turn it to her to walk us through the section before she hands it back, and I'll take us through the PowerPoint.
Before any of our comments, I also represent the nation and join us at 11:30 a.m.
Thank you, Chair Stolen-Gate. Through the chair, we also need staff to Representative Snyder. Section 1 of the bill amends 3713.40 by removing the original statutory formula, so there's no longer any conflicting language. Makes no changes to the PLOA rate, but adds the amount of appropriate time to see the balance of the earnings reserve account. Section 2 amends 3713.45. Disposition is complete, but you're providing the new appropriation guidelines for the PFD and PLOA, which is so if state revenue outside of the PLOA, 50% of the PLOA comes not from the calculated baseline budget, but the other 50% of the PLOA are going towards the PFD. The baseline budget is calculated using a 5-year trailing average that is cumulatively adjusted for inflation and population changes, which means for the FY23, or for example, for the FY23 budget baseline calculation, it would incorporate the budget for FY17 and FY21. And conversely, if changes occur in FY24, then those changes might show up until FY26. The average annual appropriations used in this calculation is the amount of the operating capital and mental health budget minus appropriations for the permanent fund dividend, the appropriations for inflation proofing of the permanent fund, and other state revenues such as taxes and grants, which is allowed in federal funds. Section 25 is the conforming language. Section 6 will direct the APDC to calculate the permanent cumulative income of the fund at the end of each fiscal year. And Section 7 adds new conforming language to the amount of the dividend. Section 8 adds removals for 3713.45 disposition of income. Because those provisions are now in Section 1, and Section 9 is in effect beginning July 1st, 2022. Thank you, Chief Arnolds. And as a part of this presentation, we'll break down that sectional and what Ms. Salami just described in visual format and with some online so you can see what exactly this bill entails and what the results would look like. Before I do that, however, I just would like to take a moment to highlight the various considerations.
I want to just recognize that Representative Hall joined us at 11:42 a.m.
Thank you, Judge Reynolds. Yeah, so before we jump into the details and the simple breakdown of what you just heard from the sectional analysis, I want to highlight the work and the considerations that went into drafting HB 260. This is the result of certain lengths of speaking with various businesses here in the building to understand their priorities and their concerns. When the fiscal policy working group was formed a few months ago, and their work was the ground during each one of these sessions, I took the opportunity to have conversations with them as their group conversations were moving forward and get their feedback, which in the middle of that group was very diverse in terms of viewpoints and priorities. And then, speaking with my own constituents, talking this with them for several months, getting their feedback. And I want to highlight this bill was developed based partially on feedback from my constituents, which, if you are not aware, is a very diverse group of individuals. I would argue that my district is one of the most purple districts, as evidenced by the margin by which our overlap district. And if there's anyone interested in finding a middle ground to best represent the diversity of my district, I would argue it might be me here this session. So, some of those considerations, and they're varied, and they fall across the whole broad spectrum. So, considering the desire of some to achieve a 50-50 split of the 5% B1B, this bill also incorporates priorities regarding sustainable, reliable, and high quality government services, something that is firmly near and dear to my heart, taking into consideration constitutional obligations. Of course, we hear a lot about the need to remedy conflicting statutory language, which HB 260 does. We, of course, hear a lot about the need for a fiscal plan, and I'll highlight in just a moment how this fits into the fiscal plan, the broader fiscal plan. Also, considering the need for flexibility and challenging budgetary climates, as we're experiencing this year, as we've experienced in previous years, we know things can bounce around quite a bit, and there is a great value in being able to consistently deliver quality government services while also being able to deliver on some predictability for Alaskans as they look forward to the PFD every year. And then, of course, we know and we value the health and economic benefits of direct payments like the PFD. We know that Alaskans utilize those funds to put food on the table, pay bills, for student college, tuition, launching a business, all of those good things. We know the PFD contributes to that at the same time. We know how important high quality government services are to improving the quality of life, maintaining our quality of life, and making sure that lots of people have to stay there, raise their family, and build a life and businesses here. So these are all things that we're considering HB 260. If many of those things sound familiar, perhaps it's also because we have many of those things outlined and prioritized as a result of the fiscal plan working group and the recommendations that they made. And before I move to the next slide and get into the needs of this bill, I did want to highlight and refresh folks' memory. When you look at, I think we put this on the outside. Yes, thank you. So this is the four-page fiscal policy working group final report, and on the second page of that full text, it highlights a series of bullet points identifying the necessary parts of a comprehensive fiscal solution as agreed upon by this diverse fiscal plan working group. And I just want to walk through these bullet points real quick and highlight how HB 260 is either conducive to achieving these bullet points and these priorities, or if it actually does meet one of these listed priorities as a necessary part of a comprehensive solution. And the first one is giving this final recommendation is a constitutional single account permanent fund structure with draft limited by B1B. This bill here could be conducive to that goal if the legislature as a whole decides that's the direction we want to go. Second bullet point, constitutional certainty for the permanent fund dividend. This bill could be conducive to meeting this goal. The third bullet point, a new P1B-based PFD formula. HB 260 delivers on this bullet point. It delivers a new formula, and it's P1B-based. The fourth bullet point, healthy capital budget, followed by the fifth and sixth new revenues, budget reductions, all identified as priorities and fiscal policy recommendations. This bill is conducive to. Expanding cap is the next bullet, city cap reform, excuse me. This bill is conducive as well as inches towards a spending cap by its use of its 5-year rolling average calculation of the baseline budget, which is the starting point for the baseline budget. It can be viewed as achieve more field guidance similar to what this Kicking app could achieve for us. My next bullet point, a 7-year quote-unquote transition period with one-time fiscal measures, this bill provides that. The next bullet point, let's see, resilience to fiscal stress. This is a key driver of HB 260 and allows us to respond properly in times of fiscal stress. Once the two-step budget reserve reform, it's conducive to a process of creating a comprehensive solution. And then the last bullet point, talking again about process, we're all times for keeping in mind with the realistic path in the legislature. I think HB 260, out of the suite of options that we have before us, is one of the ones that may be most likely to draw support across the aisle. I'll go ahead and also convince you of that moving through these next months. Forgive me, we too got used to seeing HB 4008 and it was an opportunity to bring it. That's what this bill was first called during special session. It was before us today. It's HB 260. Nothing has changed. So if you've read 4008, you've read 260. And this bill does three primary things. One, it maintains the language that we have regarding the 5% POMD draw and eliminating the conflicting language. It provides guidance on the distribution of the POMD grant between the general fund and the dividend fund. And then, as highlighted by Ms. Zonke a moment ago, it also has conforming language. So, for those of you who may be visual processors of information, as I am, we offer a diagram to walk you through what HB 260 does and how it works. And I appreciate the fact here in a little bit, just want to take the opportunity here and read directly from the slide. So if you're starting at the top left of the slide where you have your pie, so to speak, of what's in the permanent, the entire permanent fund, here we are pulling, here you have your yellow pie, and then at the top of this slide, we can put the legislature direct earnings from the permanent fund to PFDs in a portion of state services. Revenue supports the remaining portion of state services. Now, under this bill, we are pulling a 5% POMD, and that POMD plus any revenues comes in, and this is where we start calculating how that money is going to be spent and how it's going to be distributed between government services and the PMP calculation. And here's what HB 260 does. If 50% of the POMV draw plus revenue, now look on the left side of the decision tree, if that flat funds the previous year's budget, which we're actually calculating as a 5-year average, then in that case, 50% would go to the PFD and 50% would be directed towards government services. That 50% plus for other sources of revenue that may exist, flat funds. We only put treat the other 50% because it goes to PFDs. In the event that 50% of the POMD draw does not flat fund the previous year's budget, then under 260, we as the legislature are directed to pull whatever percentage is necessary from the other 50% that could go to PFDs to make sure we're flat funding the budget. So, in other words, the POMD split is adjusted to fill the gap. However, it's important to note in the way that this is designed, but in both cases, just outlining the doors left open to new cuts in the budget as well as new revenue added to the budget. I would say, looking at the final bottom part of this slide, a few justifications and rationales for why this could be a good way forward. It eliminates conflicting language and statutes, as stated earlier. It protects against unsustainable growth, but at the same time, protects against guaranteed year-to-year budget fluctuations between the numbers, cost challenges, and decreases in the quality of services that we're providing for the government. It increases expression of cost and reasonable revenue measures by increasing efficiencies as well. And it provides a win number six, depending on what your priorities are, as laid out in the consideration slide earlier in this presentation. And I'm going to hand it over to Ms. Zonke to address modeling assumptions and some of the example calculations we have for you today.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Schrader, I also want you to staff to represent us now. The next few slides will be a couple of examples of different revenue scenarios that will be available for flat funding. Our revenue is $216 adopted for a budget or a minus $100 million increase in appropriations and revenue.
Thank you.
county budget is $2.5 billion. Which is not to the budget. And except of course,
I represent a full, I believe it is. And the other thing is that based on the budget that I showed there is cumulatively adjusted for population change and inflation.
And just to clarify, so the appropriations of revenue is the total operating capital and mental health budgets less what we sometimes call traditional revenue, non-POMD. Revenue, so it's sort of a net number excluding projected amount of revenue and other items. So it's a very different nomenclature than we do between using referencing the budget. So I just want to make sure everybody understands this. Thank you, Dr. Chair. I represent it well because the SNAP budget is not something from the year before. It is the rolling 5-year average. So it will bounce around a little bit because the 5-year budget that you're talking about average from now is around a little bit because you're spending different numbers to move forward year to year. So you're dropping in old bills here in video. So obviously, you're.
But since that appropriation is less revenue. Okay, so based on budget, has nothing to do with the other rules next to it. The line above that would function great. It's just a tracking for the full amount, and well, I don't know what the version actually is. It's not just a straight back on the rules.
If I understand, if I may respond. Yes, absolutely. So we're talking about appropriations less revenue. We're doing it because we really want to focus on what percent of the POMD job do we actually need to make sure we're not finding the budget once we've already taken it and overpaying from other sources? And to get a little bit more clear to that line of questioning, if I may clear, I think that to your point about fluctuating loan prices, for example, to that point, I think HB 260. I'd argue gives us a little more flexibility to respond appropriately to make sure we're able to maintain continuity and services because what HB 260 does not do is prescribe a hard and fast distribution on how we're going to divvy up the POMDs, whether it's 90-10 or 25-75, or this 50-50. Essential is conditional. Only if we're able to draw funds are we going to direct those 50% and the event that we can't. And we get the backfill, whereas if we had a hard and fast, if the market tanks, if it's a 75% that doesn't cover our baseline, then we could be in a bit of a pickle and have to figure out some alternatives that aren't necessary in my respect.
All right, any other questions from committee members? All right,
for the
Your question is about what future spatial program may be about available
percentage of the money you appropriate? Necessarily from training in the legislature perspective, as we can just leave it a little more to what you're referring to in the Constitution.
Thank you for the chair, Representative Easton. Just simply to say that nothing in this bill would violate what is currently permitted or required in the Constitution, and is also conducive to any future additional activities as discussed and recommended by the Fiscal Policy Working Group.
Thank you, Paul. Speak a little bit to how the population adjustment is being made. Based on the population, is there a certain threshold of population change that needs to happen before adjustment occurs, or how by recent is the population data that's going to be triggering that adjustment, or if you have people leaving the state in given years, is that going to trigger the same kind of adjustment, or is it more anticipated that the same population continue to grow?
President Schiller, I'll ask indeed staff to represent us. Representative Eastman, I believe the population adjustments are done annually using data from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Scenario three, switching it around just a bit, we're looking at increasing the budget by 100 million, but also adding a little new revenue. All the assumptions we made are changed. Again, you can see a slight variation. I think one of your take homes here is with the particular scenarios that we're presenting, those very moderate revenues, which I will remind folks in the Fiscal Policy Working Group recommendations. The recommendations regarding revenue generation, I believe, from getting a range back of something like 500 million to 700 plus million was a recommendation. We don't have that reflected here, but would more quickly direct us towards the 50-50 split. So, one of the takeaways with HB 260, and I would argue, would actually, for some, increase pressure or increase motivation for identifying new revenue sources.
$100 million, I think, once you said every year, the adjustment. reflects that which appropriation cost was something like a total budget minus a baseline budget. But it's kind of up and down. I guess we have a population of things in there, but is that 100 million per year or just one time?
The general insulin, the representative level is 100 million every year beginning in FY24, and that will be the same as functioning for future levels of ATD, and appropriations and revenue will begin in FY24 and go through FY31.
All right, thank you. That terminal addition is a very important data point for a community perspective.
Thank you, sir, before President Slater, again, for the record. Before I move to our final slide, this one question focusing on new revenue, I want to follow that on a conversation I had the update to have with Representative Wolf the other day. And I will clarify my need for very short and maybe on the full committee as we benefit of that clarification. So, in the context of new revenue, if everything that we have, so, including our various sources of revenue, including the state taxes and our federal funds, plus the 50% of the POMB, if that flattens, the other 50% of the POMB goes to 50, we've got that, I think, down. So, the new regulars, based on your question yesterday, Representative Wolf, what happens if we do generate new revenue? Where is it directed to first? And I think that's a very important question. So, any revenue, the way the bill is written, we're going to follow the way the bill is written. Of course, we do have other courts. We can make some interest in the other court about these, but we're going to follow the letter of the law in HB 260. Any new revenue would first be important in showing that we can flat fund the baseline budget. Any remainder, once we flat fund that baseline budget, would go to bring us up to the 50% PFD. If the legislature decided that year that they did not want to increase the budget, they are free to increase the budget and not directly towards the 50% PFD, but that would be the first next step before increasing the budget. If we kept the budget flat, then we were able to achieve the 50% PFD with the new revenue, and if there was anything left over after that, we would, of course, go back to however we would direct it. It could not go with the PFD because this bill says the cap, essentially, is 50%. So it could go to savings, it could go to expanding the budget, whatever made sense. And finally, our scenario 4, in this case, and we have other scenarios we're happy to share. Of course, we also have scenarios, you know, within the governor's amended budget as well. But in this case, this is still, in this case, with 100%, excuse me, 100 million addition to the budget with 200 million in new revenue. And again, same format in the graph, same format in the table, and you can see the progression.
Thank you, Judge Carey. A little bit of you mentioned somebody potentially buying the savings. So, if the money doesn't go towards the government, but the savings, how does that impact the next year's dividend?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, this is a great question. And we have learned that savings is money directed towards savings would not be calculated into the baseline budget, the new baseline budget.
Yeah, okay. And so it's not a baseline budget, so correct the cost, but how does that impact the value of the interest dividend?
The same as it would in any other scenario, you would simply take your 5-year rolling average, not including funds that were directed towards savings.
If we had, $10 billion to savings, impact the amount of the next year's dividend, or is that a separate calculation?
No, my understanding is that it would not impact it, but if our financial minds on the line would like to add or correct me, I stand Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Rao, can you address the question? The chair, Representative Wall, I think we're experiencing that pressure now and have been for several years. But I think with HB 260, one with it is that we would now be following the law, which we hear a lot from constituents and residents. So please follow what is in statute. It is rude. But we're not following what's in statute, and the court says we said we don't have to, but it is a challenging argument to make. I think HB 260 is the way written. That's pressure, good, causing pressure in both directions. One, it can add pressure for new revenue, because if we do add new revenue, then we can, in theory, direct more to the PFD. I think it also allows us to increase the budget, but because it will come at the cost of the larger PFD, it puts pressure on us, rightfully so, to make sure that we're growing the budget in a smart way, and that we're able to justify that. HB 260 would allow us to do all of those things.
Very interesting question, Representative Wall. But if you have questions, clarify them. I want to make sure we get to our bill.
Okay, and yeah, the last question would be, you just mentioned it. If you have a budget or have a different revenue principle, I don't think the bill would be up to 50-50 level. But do you think that? You see that as a problem, that if a budget raised revenue simply to pay the bigger PFD, and any revenue we're doing would be broken to that up to the 50-50 level.
For the chair, well, sorry, I was formulating my response before I let you finish the last part of your last sentence. Can you repeat the last part of your last sentence?
If you see a problem that if you advocate for new revenue, you have to do it simply first part of the bill is to show up at 50-50 PFD, and people that are maybe interested in new revenue are not interested in new revenue, would not make that the sensible purpose or the solution.
This is a very clear, really personal answer. I think there are different interpretations of ways to answer your question. I can only answer from my interpretation. raise revenue in a different way under different formulas and impacting different Alaskans at different levels, right? Well, depending on the revenue. I'm thinking of your proposal or ways to raise revenue through a formula income tax. And there's different percentages and different amounts that different categories of Alaskans, so to speak, would contribute to that. Whereas with the PFD, it is the same amount that every single Alaskan. So a dollar out of the PFD impacts Alaskans differently than, say, a dollar collected through something like an income tax. I can work on refining that answer. I know what I want to tell you.
Does that kind of understand the scenario that you were sort of describing to me? I have a piece of it. And the first line item we see on your table here is appropriation of less revenue. So if there's additional revenue, that revenue doesn't actually flow directly to dividends. It flows to the budget as the first point in time. And the dividend formula is based on the balance, essentially, at that point in time. So I think the answer to the question from my perspective is that the first place that revenue goes is to the budget.
Could you give us more of a real-world example? For example, how would this have impacted last year's dividend if your bill was lower currently at that time?
Through the chair, Ms. Zellenby seems to want to add to that. First, I'll let you go first, so my perspective, Melanie. Through the chair, Representative Kennedy asked me to just add your point on this because then it was too crowded, but we can certainly share those numbers with you after the hearing. I just thank you for your consideration and for answering any additional questions you might have as you contemplate this bill.
All right, thanks very much. We appreciate your time today. Hopefully, we'll get this all started and for being encouraged to try to be part of the solution. All right, and we will have a transition over to House Bill 223. We've got three amendments that were. That were submitted by the government of 5 p.m. yesterday. The first amendment, I will move on with number one. All right. So, amendment number one would require the legislative findings to submit to produce recommendations regarding which collective funds should be repealed and repealed with each 2-year legislative cycle. The recommendations would be forwarded to the governor and the legislature for consideration. Also encourages the governor to introduce legislation in accordance with the report and tell the governor what to do when we continue to encourage them to do that. The intent of this amendment is essentially the real system in which enacted funds are readily reviewed and acted upon to reinvigorate and represent a confluence or continuous quality improvement feedback loop into the process to maintain the rejection representatives.
I have a question. And my question is, so if the election association is making this recommendation, how strict the criteria is going to be using? Or are we encouraging them to give us as long a list of funds to repeal as possible? Or if there's some other guidance here, rather than the person looking at what are the criteria that we're asking them to use to make that recommendation?
During the chair, you're representing based on, and in general sense, it's time in the activity order. But if there's another known lack of need for the funds, so there is some subjectivity to it, but if you had to have a criteria, it's how long is this, what was this created for, was it still needed, and how long has it been here, when you used it. So there's kind of a general sense that you can make criteria for it, but sometimes what you find is that that will still miss things that could be opportunities. So thank you.
Can I start over my director and the administration, so that we have this kind of ongoing feedback loop. This is going to help us be more effective. Is that right, Brian?
Thank you. With that, I withdraw my objection.
All right, is there any objection to adopting amendment number one? All right, so we have amendment number one is adopted. Is there a motion for amendment number two?
I move amendment two.
Alternative for discussion.
All right, Representative Davis.
Yes, legislative funding, the last energy resource regulation concerns about repealing the renewable energy fund. There are two projects still under the umbrella of the fund, and $3 million has been given recently before this week. It came from labs to fund the project. If those projects are expensed in the future, legislative finance companies can go back in the real benefit of the fund. So without getting into the details of the number of subsidiary projects, I believe it's safe to say the question of repealing the renewable energy fund is a larger one than simply a cleaner development of the Department of the Energy Fund. If the person builds a separate cleaner building or repealing of the fund, I think the real balcony fund should remain as having a moderate amount still. I was just maybe just want to have Mr. Fager just stand and thank you for that.
Mr. Fager, would you like to make a comment?
It's 370560 Alaska Affordable Energy Fund, and it became a real project. The Alaska Affordable Energy Fund is created as a special account in the general fund. The fund consists of the amount that can be deposited in the fund under subsection B of this section. An interest earned on fund balance that permits the funds to provide a source from which the legislature may appropriate money to build infrastructure to deliver energy to areas of the state that are not expected to have or do not have direct access to the natural gas. And in subsection B, the amount to be deposited in A is 20% of the revenue received from the state's royalty gas transport and allows for the 5 million gas project. is either personally or group meeting part for me. I'm a lover of history and museums and archives and all of those sorts of things. And I know that this is nice today. Well, it seems like a good idea on paper. Somebody puts an energy into it 8 years ago. The gas line is something this administration wants, the previous administration wanted. And the interest to be served is infrastructure development off the rail belt, essentially, between Truro, roughly, and South Central Alaska. So I don't think we should bury this into the historical footnote, and that's why this is an EP.
Thank you. And my question is, if the state were to begin using this fund as it was originally designed, is there, what is lacking between where we're at now to what we need to get to that point? Is there some other activity on the part of the legislature that's required, or are we just waiting for some change in market forces? If the legislature is going to need to make some change in the future to bring this back to life, will it be easy enough to reactivate this fund or report on it even better? What are you doing to make the change that legislation passed?
I would say that things that are on the book will be reviewed, or in the books and things that are may not be. And I just assume the emphasis in many there. Probably on a component part of the larger bill, the bill was struck, and that this was something to win, and they sacrificed some of their elements. So, one thing I would say is this looks to be a potential role in Alaska. That's the motivation. And for that reason, I'm going to talk to you soon.
All right, Representative Thomas.
Thank you for your chair. I would love if we were to be able to ask for that and get it to the customers. I think it's a resource that we really need to look at. And I respect your argument on this. The one thing I'll say is that the slight words or bottle I would say is that I think that perhaps to accelerate these panels sitting around. So the bill's only intent is really to clean up that which we don't need. And so I have no strong objection to it. I respect your instincts about making it more possible that we can get gas out and we can really use it. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a comment, and my comment is that I think as we are looking to do better and create this better process going forward, I think things in the process which are important. And I object to this indictment because there's anything particularly terrible about this not existing, but if we're going to be looking to things like a particular legislator back to pass a particular bill, and so that puts something in statute in order to see it more kind of respect or deference to that particular legislator who may not still be living or the particular geographers who know is continuing to get impacted. I think having that precedent would make it pretty difficult, I think, for this process to move forward in the future. There's always going to be someone that the reasons for putting something in statute, and then we're going to be in a situation that's worth picking, which legislator that's monitored, which bill is worth keeping, which is not. And so this is our criteria more objectively on the reasons why a particular bill got into law doesn't have a legal effect. If it has a legal effect now, it's quite the last amendment, and now it's important, keeping that. If it's not needed, if it's not being used, if it doesn't have a legally beneficial purpose, then I think it's not just to set a level playing field. I would say all of those things should be flawed for being removed and put back, maybe in a different time or in a better way.
Thank you.
all right to keep your arm count.
Our business today, March 15th,